Hey, everyone. It is May 26th, 2020. Oh, 2026. Look at that. It's a rhyme. I kept writing January the other day for some reason, but I'm like, no, it's May. It's May. So we've got folks, and oh, there's a heat wave. So we were talking about the weather because that is a very stealthy way to start small talk and social engagement. So it's hot in the UK, 32 degrees. That's obviously Celsius. 30 in Switzerland. Wow. 30 in Belgium. All right. 24 in Nova Scotia. We've shifted. That's Canada. Hot in the south of France. All right. So the folks in Europe, stay cool. On the note of weather and staying cool, that's one of our primary self-regulatory functions, right? So we're going to get into the handout definitely today. So this is our ninth training call, neuroplastic healing sequencing. Theory and practice equals application and integration. And we've just started for those on the recording, which is most of you, most likely. Thank you to all those here live, and thanks to all on the recording. As we know, as we regulate our systems, and as we get better at attuning to self and listening to interoception, and we move survival physiology out through the lessons and doing the work of listening and integrating, that autonomic nervous system starts to improve. So we notice when we're cold and we warm ourselves up. Yeah. When we're cool or hot, sorry, we sweat. Some of you might say, oh, I never sweat, Irene. Is anybody like that? It's hard to sweat. And for some of us, it's hard to warm up. So these are core physiological elements that we want, just like our digestion, our immune system, seeing the world around us, sensing our bodies. And these processes can also be extra. Some folks, extra sweat, there's actually a term for that. I can never pronounce it. Some of us are always cold and shivering, right? Extremities are cold. So, again, back to following impulse, which we've learned a long time ago. So, maybe before we get into the official, and thanks for all your comments here. Again, if you've got paper and pen, and maybe you do for the handout, just jot down some of the things that you've been experiencing as you learn to follow your impulse more. So we'll go back to those basics. Oh, wow. Someone said, only felt sweat drip off my face for the first time recently. That's cool. Definitely. So, Helen has, in terms of following impulse, I think this is what you mean, more agency. Yeah. Agency is a light way of saying more boundary, self-boundary, maybe, personal agency that I am. I'm gonna swear, don't fuck with me energy, right? It's like sometimes we gotta use some colorful words. Listen to me. Someone said, I'm not so hungry. Yeah, back to those impulses. Has anybody found that their hunger cravings have shifted? Again, this all goes back to the early trauma pieces that you would have learned in biology of stress video number four, way back in the first few labs. That connection of how were we attuned to when we were infants? Were we given food when we were hungry? Right? Or were we forced to cry ourselves into survival freeze or into stress? It's how far back this goes. That's why those earlier lessons so important. So food, hydration, someone says more sensitive. Yeah. Of course, for some of us who are hypersensitive, you might go, what? Why would you want to become sensitive? And we want to become sensitive, but in a regulated way. Humans are meant to be sensitive. If we weren't, we wouldn't smell toxins that weren't good for us. We wouldn't smell the gas leak or the fire burning that isn't supposed to be burning. We wouldn't smell the off food in our refrigerator. So sensitivity is really important. We just don't want that sensitivity to dysregulate us. Ah, food noise has quieted and following hunger cues better. Someone said increase in appetite. Yes, some of us undereat. For those of us who overeat, that might seem strange, but there's a lot of people who undereat and then they gorge or they binge when they realize their blood sugar is so low. Babies know this really well when they sense their blood sugar, but they're not thinking blood sugar. They sense something's missing, they cry, then they're meant to be fed. I'm farting more. Yeah. Passing gas. That means the digestion's working better. Addiction to food appears to have gone. Yeah. Sleep better. I have dreams every night. I go to the toilet more often. So all this takes time. Heightened intuition. Yep. Little by little, I'm starting to cry. So emotions. Remember, we covered emotions in, I'm going to quiz myself. I believe it was training call number four, I think, where we talked about where do emotions, so quiz time, where do emotions come from? Remember? Emotions are originated from our organs. At least that's the new traumatology world, what Peter Levine and if you can remember Nina Bull, we talked about her in one of the training calls. That example of if you see a bear, what makes you scared? Is it running? Is it the sense inside? So the more we connect, the more we practice the diaphragm's lessons. So important, the joint lesson. Even resourcing and noticing our body when we resource, all that is in service of improving our ability to sense our interoception. Poos improved amazingly a few months ago. Yes. And now not so good. Yes, that also happens. When we start to regulate our nervous system, it doesn't just happen and then it's smooth sailing forever. There will be bigger waves, there will be smaller waves. You might feel great for a bit, and then you're hit with incredible pain and excruciating headaches, as I was the last 2 weeks. It's not something that I'm doing, it's just old fascia that I'm unlocking in my skull from concussions and whiplashes. But I'm still able to be here and think, right? So just know when symptoms shift, it doesn't mean that your his whole system has to break down. Been doing this for 15 years, and there are still things coming up and out, right? So this is part of life when we are working on this stuff. I wanted to say a thing about poops, right? If you're a parent and you've had a baby, you know when something is off, when the poop changes. When it's not as good, that's how you know the health of that little one's intestines. It's what they sense when they're not feeling well. Bloated belly, And then the 5-year-old that doesn't like their teacher says, "My tummy hurts. I don't want to go to school." Has anybody heard that from their kids? Were you that kid? I certainly was. I didn't want to go to school in grade one because the teacher was really mean. Right? And so kids feel this in their body. My tummy hurts. This is what we're trying to get back to. Yeah, someone says being more aware of the trigger and then can pause and redirect that energy. Yes. That's again what is improving. More awareness to the cows in the pasture next to my home, too. Yeah. We all have the ability to talk to animals, to sense them, right? More reflected off of other stress systems. All right. Okay. Thank you, everyone. Let me just have a little sip here. More aware of boundaries. Yeah. Oh, dogs suddenly love me. That's fun. Why is that? There's the next quiz. Why would animals not like us, and then all of a sudden we have animals just coming up wanting to give us kisses? More relaxed. Let's be more specific. More regulated. Yeah. There's greater safety in our system. If an animal senses we're afraid, and it doesn't have to be because of them, they will be afraid of us. They're sensing that frequency. Same with kids. That's why the little baby that keeps crying and crying, even though we're holding them and doing everything right, might not stop because they sense our nervous energy underneath that might not even be in our own awareness. Cats are different. The thing with cats, this will be my final little veterinarian teaching piece, and we'll get into the call and to the learning here. Cats need to be treated like babies, just like puppies. Cats are actually really sophisticated creatures, but people tend to ignore cats when they're kittens. They lock them in a shoebox. They don't cuddle them. They don't let them outside. I know that some of us have to keep cats inside because we live in cities, but that's not how they're supposed to live. They're hunters, right? They're nocturnal. So if we have cats and kits, that's why kittens should stay with their mothers at least to 12 weeks to bond and have that feeding and have secure attachment. And then when we get them, they need to get to know us. So cats that are treated like actual, mammalian creatures who need care and connection, they are very different than cats that are what we might call barn cats. For those of you that have grown up on farms, very hard to pick up a barn cat. Those of you know that are around barns, they don't want to touch you because they've been isolated. So kitties need that attention, especially if they're domesticated and living with us. So cats are good. Okay, so back to this top of the handout here. Reference materials, what we're really doing here in SBSM, why there's this process of learning and practice and together, it's we're working with neuroplastic sequencing, healing sequencing. I'm going to go over this again because it's important. On the first page here, and then we're going to break up each piece as we go through these 6 pages. Another thing, just to remind you of, at the very beginning of SBSM, there were some pregame videos on food and movement and scheduling and resting, and be sure to remind yourself of those if you haven't seen them, or maybe watch them with fresh eyes. Feeling resistance is another big one. What that's about. the 3-part healing trauma video training, which is super old now, about 10 years old. If you want to see a difference between Irene less regulated and more regulated, just go to those videos. I cringe watching them, but it's good to see these changes. You'll see those changes in you as you move forward and keep practicing the lessons. Seth's music on the site, again, he composed that music specifically for the sequencing idea. Slow. Has anybody had a chance to listen to that music? Yeah, it's good stuff. Handy to have a trained composer in the household. All right. So, again, all this stuff is on the additional resources tab on the site. Okay, so I just have to also give credit. We're about to talk about neuroplastic healing sequencing, and I learned about this through Norman Doidge, who wrote 2 books, The Brain's Way of Healing, which is where this is from, and also from The Brain That Changes Itself. I first read that book in 2005, I think, when it came out. And it sort of was the first book that was out there that really spoke about neuroplasticity from a layman perspective, meaning it's a very accessible book for someone to read who doesn't have science background and understanding. You can really get through that. Lots of stories of people. Doidge is a MD. I believe he's a psychiatrist, Canadian. So he really put neuroplasticity on the map. That's what I'm trying to say. Even though we knew it was there, Dr. Feldenkrais, that was last week's call. He was considered the first ever neuroplastician by Norman Doidge. So he was really one of the first people to showcase that you can rewire and retrain a human through movement and through awareness. Yeah. So do not underestimate the power of the Feldenkraisian lessons in SBSM. I cannot repeat that enough. The learning is in those lessons and in how you sense your movement, how you think about the movement, how your breath keeps going or doesn't. I teach all of that in the lessons, right? I often say, are you breathing? Can you still feel the ground under you? That is what humans can do. We can think and notice and change action. Animals can't do that. They can be conditioned. But I said this, I think, last week. The moment a stress or a squirrel is there, all their training goes out the window. And that's not our fault as their masters, as their owners. It's their physiology and that lack of that prefrontal cortex. So it's very important to remember you gotta use that prefrontal cortex, even if it's just a little bit, to notice these differences in the movement. These are the lessons of potent posture. These are the lessons of cultivating the inhale. Those are the lessons of connecting the head and the pelvis. The mini balancing your back, the leg going side to side, the further lessons down, the bell hands. So, just really wanting to stress upon how important that Feldenkraisian learning is, because it's that makes us sense in the moment what's happening in our bodies. And then Feldenkrais would say, if we can change how we move, if we can change the quality of our movement, with awareness, we change how we think because it's the thinking that leads the movement. There's this thought that this work is just bottom up. And Peter Levine corrected somebody one day in an interview. No. This isn't just bottom up, it's bottom up and top down, right? You are all here thinking and learning, and that's what makes the difference. That makes sense? Rhetorical question. That makes sense. I hope that makes sense. So it's like, yes, that's the relearning. And we start that from a young age through how we crawl, or how we weren't allowed to crawl, right? So this is, again, everyone's going to be different based on how they were raised when they were little. And this is why it's so important for kids and adults, obviously, to move, because that gets us into our bodies and sensing and feeling. Okay, so that's my homage to Feldenkrais and how important that part of the learning is in terms of rewiring and regulating the system. So, speaking of which, so under neuroplastic healing, four of those five stages, remember the first stage is clean water, good food, sunlight, good environment, no toxins, what we would call the first stage of neuroplastic healing is all the other stuff that has got so much information for us to learn from in various places. You know, this is where the nutrition helpers and healers and coaches and exercise helpers and coaches, toxins, etc. That's the first stage. But of course, SBSM are all these four stages. So the first is neurostimulation. I'll go through these fairly quickly because we'll break down each one in a second. So movement, touch, light, sound, visualization. The next one, neuromodulation, also known as regulation. So neuroregulation. I mean, if we really want to be picky, everything is neuro because nerves are connected to everything. But humans like to put extra things on top of things. So neuroactivation or stimulation, neuromodulation, regulating the brain, the nervous system. Next one down, letter C there, neurorelaxation. That's rest that restores and repairs, being lazy, sleeping, having quiet time. Quiet time is so important, especially important for kids, but it's important for adults too. I think this is why we're having such trouble with so many kiddos with troubles, is every moment of their day they are stimulated by something. Whether it's school or devices or sports or learning or interactions, and we need time to be bored. Remember that idea of being bored? I'm bored. That teaches us to just be with ourselves for constantly being entertained. Very important to watch that habit and have time to just sit. And not necessarily do a meditation, not listen to something, but to just sit. Even for 5 minutes, that's what we mean, or what I mean here by being lazy. This doesn't mean not doing the things you know you need to do in life, but having moments to chill out a bit. Neurodifferentiation. So, this is differentiation. Refining skills, growing options and choices. Having more choices. If we only have a couple of choices in how we do things, we're sort of, the word that comes to mind is stymied. We're kind of in a corner. Someone mentioned in the chat here that when they did one of the Feldenkrais lessons, the first lesson, their sciatic pain and back pain was changed significantly. That isn't because I went in and healed that person's back. It's because they followed the instruction and listened and went slow. And that opened up all these different movement possibilities in the skeleton. And then in doing that, the muscles were like, oh, I can go this way. I can go that way. Oh, I can do this without holding my breath. What does that do? That allows the diaphragm to relax. What's behind the diaphragm? The mid back. What's behind the abdomen, the lower back. So it's all connected. So while some of us might say, and I saw this in my Feldenkrais training, we'll go to page two, everyone. Feldenkrais is so magical. It is and it isn't. Just like some people will say, oh, that somatic experiencing thing is so magical. It is and it isn't. It's just tapping into what's already there, having these different options. All right. So, neurostimulation, page two. I'm about to read one of my favorite paragraphs from a book that is quite dense called Dexterity and Its Development by Nikolai Bernstein or Barnstein. So, neurostimulation. So, all, that's the word at the top. ALL. 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 And, folks, if you're worried about finding something on the site right now, I mentioned the pregame videos. Do that after, right? If you can focus on what we're working on now on the handout, I just wanted to remind everyone that those are there. So go and get those later. They're on the site. And we will keep going with what we're working on right now. I don't want you to miss this paragraph. So take a second to just come back to your awareness. Maybe let your eyes come away from the computer for a second. So, someone asked, are we not ready for Feldenkrais if we don't have enough regulation? It really depends, you guys. I can't say yes or no. You got to try a little bit. That's why potent posture is the one of the first Feldenkraisian lessons. You're in standing. When you're in standing, the system has to activate more muscles to keep you upright, right? So if one feels restless during this, then it might be that your system's not ready for all of them. But what I might suggest is go back to potent posture. And if that restless energy comes in, move a bit. Stomp your feet. Let that out. Right? And then, yes, come back to basic health practices, orienting, following impulse. But it's also important, and I talked about this in training call number three, I believe, the chicken or the egg, meaning sometimes we actually have to find someone, a practitioner, to help us work on specific shock traumas, right? That are keeping a hold on us. And that restless energy might be an old accident or an old fight flight that needs a little extra help to move out, right? So please know that sometimes, just like myself, and I know I could probably speak for Jen here. And others here who are have been around. It's usually common that you have to get some work on specific things. We are not able to always witness the things that are happening in our body, right? And that's again, SBSM is designed to teach you skills and the learning, and then sometimes we need that little extra help. Okay, so back to dexterity and its development. So, just for context, the reason I have this in here, and one could read this paragraph and create a thesis on it because there's so much richness in this. But to give you an idea, Bernstein, long past, he was a Russian academic researcher interested in human potential, I guess at the time, Soviet. And he was Pavlov's competitor, if we want to call it that. Who remembers the Pavlovian experiments, right? The dog salivation, it's classic textbook psychology of the bell, the conditioning response, and the dog salivates just by hearing the bell, even though there's no food there. We have that in us too. But that isn't the best way to live, is to be conditioned. But many of us are. This is what culture can do. I'm being very careful with my words there. Culture can condition us to be in tunnels of seeing things in certain ways, and that's fine. But sometimes we need to get out of this stuff. Bernstein, Nikolai, he thought, felt that humans had huge potential and that they need to learn and they need to practice things to become better humans, right? So here is what he writes in this book. Really listen to this. Real, I'm really going to encourage everyone to listen, to li take this in. Maybe if it feels right, close your eyes or get up and listen to this. So the learned movement, again, I'm putting this in because this is around stimulation movement, the Feldenkrais lessons, but even the touch that you might do in the diaphragms lessons, the joints. The learned movement must be actually performed many times in order to actually experience all the sensations which form the basis for its sensory corrections. If you have your pen, underline sensations, right? He's calling out the sensory aspect. It must be performed many times. I'm going to add thousands of times. Many times to allow the brain's sensory areas to become acquainted with all the variety of deviations and modifications and to combine a vocabulary for all future deciphering. Certainly, comma, the most sensible correction training, the most sensible correction training, that's what we're doing in SPSM. We're training different ways, right? We're correcting bad habits because some habits are bad, right? We're correcting things. So the most sensible correction training would be organized in a way that combined a minimization of effort with a large variety of well-designed sensations and that created optimal conditions for meaningfully absorbing and memorizing these sensations. So that word, if you underline minimization of effort, where in the lessons am I asking you, are you efforting? Let me know in the chat. At what point am I cueing you to notice if you're efforting? Breathing. Yeah. Are you breathing? Is there tightness in your jaw? Are your hands clenched, even though I've not asked you to clench your hands, right? These are very old things that we carry. I still sometimes wake up with a clenched fist. I have no idea what that's from. Could be from all the typing I do, could from all the days that I was paragliding, holding these strings in the air for my dear life, all the ski poles I held, all the wrist fractures from falling on ice. Hard to know. But I don't worry about it. I wake up, oh, tension, let's release that, right? Jaw, yeah. Is our jaw tight? So that's minimization of effort. The other way is just do a little bit. Just go half the distance you think you can go. Again, in some of these lessons, right? Potent posture. I'm not saying fall flat on your face, making a joke there, obviously. What do I say? Just go forward a little bit, just an inch. Because if you go too fast and too far, the survival mechanism is going to kick in to protect you. So that's why we just go a touch forward or a touch back. And you go, oh, I just, again, this is taught in the lesson. I held my breath. Ah, interesting. Okay, let's do that again. And let's consciously keep breathing as I do this. So this paragraph explains to a T this self-learning through noticing sensation. I just clenched my muscles. Effort. Oh, I'm efforting. The forehead is the other dead giveaway. Everybody, do a concentrated look with me. I'm thinking really hard. Feel the tension? Ugh. But if you go into a lesson that's supposed to be learning based with that extra effort, you're again, this was last call. Remember, I talked about will versus skill. It's willpowering it. I would rather you do 2 minutes of Feldenkraisian exploration with minimization of effort. You're in the sensory aspect. You can feel your feet. You know you're in the living room. Then power through 50 minutes of something to say, I did it. Right? This is real adult learning. It's very difficult for those of us who are conditioned to be the good student. I know how hard that is when we had value based on how good our grades were, or how pretty we were, or how well we performed our gymnastic routine, or whatever it might be. Right? So it is challenging how we have been taught to learn for so long. Again, I cannot express enough how important it is to slow these things down and to listen to these sensory pieces. For a little, extra learning, it would take a paper and pen later today or whenever and write out this paragraph and really feel those words. This is how we study, right? We've got to actively engage with this kind of concept that stimulates the brain, it stimulates our thinking. So, speaking of which, next line down, to stimulate means to activate. Activation, and it's activation is not always a bad thing, right? Who here likes to turn on a nice pop song or a rock song and boogie a little bit, a little disco, a little ABBA, Rage Against the Machine, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, Elvis, Beatles, Bob Dylan, right? We like these artistic creations because it stimulates us. It might make us cry. It might make us want to move. Old protest songs are very powerful, right? They spark up something in us, and it's very strange to sit to listen to a big funky tune and just stay still, right? I never forget the first time we went to a symphony in Vancouver. And I couldn't believe that everybody was just sitting so still. And it was something spring. I should know. It's a composition that has a lot of big energy. And it when it was played back in the day, people ran out of the losing the word for it because I've not been to the symphony in so long, to the place you go to listen to music. And they ran out crazy. I really should remember this. Stravinsky, that's who it was. Stravinsky, Rite of Spring. Thank you, theater. But they felt in their body energy that they probably, at that very repressed stage in humanity, had never felt before. So, for those curious about Rite of Spring, I say with a warning, it is intense. But when you listen to these things, it is odd that so many sit still, right? This ability to move. And yeah, mosh pits, definitely. So, anyway, so activation. Stimulate is not a bad thing. Of course, we don't want to overdo it to the point where we're not paying attention to where we are. And we also don't want to overdo it to the point where we're shutting down, right? So, again, let's bring this back to nervous system physiology and that spectrum where there's too much and we basically dissociate or we shut down, and then there's too much and we stay hyperactivated and we can't sleep, right? Next line, sound, movement, light, visualization, visualizing are all various kinds of stimuli into the human system. Walking, moving, dancing, music, humming, singing, being in the sun, having a bath or a cold shower, these are all changes to our environment and how that environment is moving into us. And so we'll feel these things. And everybody is different in terms of what they are able to take in, contain. Remember that word containment from training call number one? Can we contain those experiences and feel them? And then there's also, I don't like that. I don't like that music. That's cool too, right? Not my thing. Next line. The main purpose of stimulating the system is to challenge it and wake up. That is the word. Because we do need to wake up. We need to sometimes invigorate the system a little bit, give it a little hello, a little knock knock. Like some who's in there, right? Are you in there? So a little wake up to the system because it's been asleep or has been simply taking a lit big long rest. That's the final word. I mean this in that if we have lived for a large part of our life in a very shut down or collapsed physiology, which is often the case that, say, connects with chronic illness, autoimmune, we have to stimulate the system. Let's go to page three and then I'll finish that thought. So, of course, D, final one on page three, top of page three. In SPSM, pretty much every single lesson and neurosensory exercise was a form of neurostimulation. It was neurostimulation. You're listening, you're activating yourself, you're moving. Even visualizing your kidneys and your adrenals without moving is a stimulation. If you had brain things connected to your head and we were reading an EEG, they would spark up. Any thinking activity is stimulation. Reading, writing, speaking. So, this is again the nuance of this work is that if I think back to watching Peter Levine, and of course, when I was in private practice working with folks or working with people, one might think that a lot of the work is slow and easy and kidney adrenal and diaphragm. And yes, that's true. But sometimes you have to get the energy moving. And this is why you see people have, the little rebounders in their office, those little trampolines. This is why we might have toys, balls. Things that you squeeze, right? There's these things called Smovie rings that got really popular in the SE world that were made from Austria for patients with Parkinson's. That's why they were designed. But they're wonderful to stimulate the arms. So you use these tools to get vibration softly into the system. Because, of course, you don't take someone who has chronic illness on a roller coaster to wake them up. That's a joke, but you wouldn't do that. But you might have them march in on the spot for a bit. So, this is where the lessons of moving the arms, again, Ilya's movement lessons, but any Qigong, Tai Chi. The most simplest thing I saw Peter Levine do is he took in a exercise stepper. Remember those old exercise steppers? Where there's really old ones that it's just little platforms on your feet that you move. They're not like the big ones you get in the fancy gyms. It's just these little steppers. You could literally lift it up with your own body weight. He had a woman with really, really bad neurological problems. I don't remember what it was. And he had her just step on this machine and then get off. And then he had her track her sensations. Then she looked at the room. They had some jokes. Then he got her on the stepper again and did a little bit more. So, what is that doing, everyone? What's that doing to the sympathetic? It's increasing it. Because when you're in shutdown, your sympathetic is buried. So, you've got to wake that tiger slowly. Not rocket science. But what it is it's introducing stimulation. So for all of you here who have various forms of, let's say, chronic illness, pain, so important to do little bits of movement. Doesn't have to be crazy martial art. It could be just going up your first step a few times and then waiting. Feeling the heart rate rise and coming down. This is super important for people that have, say, POTS. But it isn't about an exercise routine. It's about challenging the system a little bit and then resting. This comes back to the biology of stress videos up and down, that sine wave. You got to increase the energy and then you want to feel it come down. Because again, remember on those videos, things get stuck or they go, phew, and we got to find that coherence through the system. Again, training call number one, where I talk about, remember the little circles you drew, like kindergarten, that back and forth, you want that flow. But when we have stuckness, there's no flow. But it's very hard to imagine that flow. We got to stimulate the system a little bit to get the flow going. So that is my speech on neurostimulation and moving. We'll finish it up with a few things here. So again, in SPSM, you moved, you touched, you learned by a constant th synthesis of thinking and sensing. You visualized. Remember, you visualized the kidneys, the gut, the brain stem. You can't touch the bone, but I had you imagine the bone, for example, the muscle. The voo, you made sound. So again, in service of stimulation, the Feldenkraisian way of learning is a potent, that's the word potent, I believe, is more potent, sorry, is more potent, I believe, than many forms of neurostimulation because we're doing more than just following the leader, so to speak. That's the word there. The reason I say that, this is in service of we're rewiring habit. Because if you go to an exercise class or a yoga class, now not all yoga classes are like this because some teachers are really good at teaching sensation and noticing. But sometimes you get into this habit of just watching the instructor and doing, which has a time and a place. Good old aerobics lessons, exercise classes. You're getting a cardio impact, you're not really looking to rewire trauma in those classes. But in the Feldenkraisian way, you're really directing the learning back to yourself. You are self-reflecting on how you hold your breath, how far you might go one direction to the other direction, even how I'm going to go to the next piece here. So you're pausing between your thoughts, images, sensations, feelings, reflexes, reactions, all of it. Of the imagined movement. So that's the next word, imagined, from the instruction and the actual movement. So in some of the lessons, I had you imagine first. And then had you do the movement. Not always, but often when I say imagine this, if I were to say imagine looking over your left shoulder, there will be a twinge in many of your nervous systems to start to look over your left shoulder. Even though I say imagine it, it starts to happen. That's how quick the brain and the sensory motor system is. But we imagine it because even in the imagination, we may sense our breath hold, right? We may sense something tighten. That's the first clue. Wow, Irene just said, imagine rolling my pelvis in a certain way. And I instantly started to cringe my forehead, thinking, how do I do that? Trust me, I've taught so many classes where I've seen foreheads start to cringe when you give a really difficult direction. And then I say, okay, think of this again. And your only job is to stay chill in this instruction. Because the moment we get worried about not knowing what we're about to do, I don't want to say it throws it out the window, but it doesn't let that learning be fresh and new. This comes back to the willpower thing. This is why Feldenkrais said, and I said this last week, he could have taught his method by doing high-level mathematics. Strange, but true. Because it was about solving problems, looking for patterns. But not everybody wants to do high-level mathematics, so he chose movement, right? But for those of you who struggled with math, I can guarantee you when you're sitting at your desk as a kid with your pencil, your forehead was cringing. You were probably holding your breath. And then that's why we don't like learning, because we weren't taught how to take something in with interest and curiosity. So again, this is, as you can see, we're almost at an hour, and I'm still talking about neurostimulation here, neuroactivation, and this Feldenkraisian way, because it is very important to understand what we're doing here. It's not just about doing the lesson for the sake of doing the lesson. So the final thing here, see, you are orchestrating a lot nervous system-wise during the neurosensory exercises. You are orchestrating a lot. Again, I go back to the baby and the toddler. For those who have raised children, you know how long it takes for a human to get onto their 2 feet and walk unaided with freedom in their arms, holding a cup of water without spilling it while talking, right? It's a long apprenticeship for us humans to get to that. That is an indication of why, when we're learning and relearning how to rewire when there's been trauma, it takes time. In a good situation, it can take a kid up to a year to get onto their 2 feet and start walking. That's in a good situation, right? So if we think about us as we're relearning here, we have to be very gracious with how long things might take. But I will also say, if you can really take this to heart, this slowing down and listening to your reactions, even with little things, it will expedite the ability for this stuff to really sink in and to really create these new changes. All right, page three and into four. So this is into neuromodulation, also known again as just regulation, so neuroregulation, and this is getting us out again of that jagged stress response way of being into that nice, smooth, coherent, up and down modulation of sympathetic, parasympathetic. We could call it yin yang, right? Expansion, contraction. We need to have movement in the body through these ups and downs, contraction, expansion, etc. So, A. This stage is all about helping the noisy brain and the autonomic nervous system become more regulated and settled so it can have the chance to heal and grow. So, regulated is the word and heal is the word. This is the name of the game that we've been working with. All of the lessons and the education is to service the entire system so it can find greater regulation. Even if it's just a little bit, that's enough to add a layer. And then you do a little bit more, and then it adds another layer, another, and another, and another. Just like children, infants, they're not lacking regulation, and then one day they have perfect self-regulation. Sometimes it's good to think of these extremes. An infant, a new human, isn't one day not able to co-regulate, sorry, self-regulate. It takes time for them to build that self-regulation. And of course, depending on the interaction with the caregiver and the co-regulation, it happens at differing degrees, varying degrees. Last line of page three. So, depending on the person and their history, as I've just kind of said, how to bring the system down. How to regulate, we could say, how to settle it will vary. This speaks to what I was just saying. Let's go to page four about some folks need a little more activation because their system's been so poof. Others have been so activated they need to feel lowering of the stress physiology. Some of us have so much activation, but it doesn't have an outlet, and it actually has to leave because it's an old shock trauma, maybe. Right? This comes back to the chicken or egg scenario back in training call. Again, I believe it's number three. I'm talking about sometimes we have to just work on an old shock trauma because it's knocking on our door so loudly. And for some of us, we need to just work with capacity building, the kidney adrenal work, the touch, etc. So, page four, before we get into page four, because I know there's been a lot of thinking here, take a second to just chill the eyes, the brain. If you need to get up, shift, follow that impulse. Practice your basics through your feet. I got sloppy in my sitting, so I'm going to readjust myself. Feel your temperature, your breathing. Okay. So, again, we're talking about this integration of lessons, and we're in that neuromodulation place. So, the first one here, so for our purposes, the first three labs, and I'm being kind of general here because there are other labs, of course, that have this, but I'm going to really focus on these first three. So, orienting, that's the first one there, can be a powerful tool for settling the system as it sparks up the parasympathetic nervous system and that social engagement nervous system. Now, I have there can, because orienting doesn't always do that. Depends on us, depends on our situation, our history. So, by looking around, and of course, feel free to do this as I read this out and you write and you pause, by having a look around with awareness and feeling the head, this head of ours, and the neck, which is that upper part of our spine, the cervical spine, move. So, that's neurostimulation. It's allowing the system to know where it is. So I'm here, my office, can see outside. Got paper, some liquids, microphone, computer, people. All of those things are around. This is where I am, right? So to see cognitively, at least, that danger isn't actually present. Now, as some of us know, many of us know, that doesn't always hold. And this is why orienting is not everything. Orienting is very important, but it's also, I think, been overdone in terms of the thing, the only thing. It can be incredibly helpful for many of you, it was. And for some, when we do it, it is terrifying. And that terror is sometimes there if we still have stored balls in our swimming pool, right? If it was a cat an accident, a car accident where we couldn't orient to the thing that was coming. Again, if it was a house that was really violent and everything around us was just crazy, last thing you want to do is look out there and see the craziness, right? Same with if you're living somewhere where it's crazy. I don't want to look at that, but it's there. So I say that in service of sometimes we want to go to other lessons to help build that safety and that capacity. And yet we do want to get to this point where we are able to explore that exploratory orienting where it's just a little bit, it's a little bit more, oh yeah, I can do this. And then we might pause, right? So orienting is incredibly important, and everyone is going to be different in how we take in orienting. B, breathing. B is for breathing. So that's the next one. So breath or breathing exercises. So cultivating the inhale and exhale are placing a focus on the body, the breath. So just this basic shift in attention can help to settle the system, and bring it to rest. So basic shift. They are also served to increase awareness capacity and help lessen the bracing. All B's on this one, bracing that occurs in the true diaphragm due to stored traumatic experiences, toxic and chronic stress. So, not much to say here, but we need to breathe. We want our breath to have fullness. When we've had old stuff, the breath can be, right? It can be tight. But if we just remind ourselves and feel free, if you want to touch this area of the body, there's ribs, there's a sternum, there's a spine, there's fascia, there's bone, there's muscle, there's fat, ligaments, tendons. When we've had a scary thing happen to us, whether it's things we've seen, or we've actually had an accident, or we've just been always kind of on guard, this whole area tightens up and it braces. It can brace. Others will be collapsed. So again, this comes back to differences in people. So sometimes we need to remove the bracing by slow, easy, chilling touch, feeling. Others we need to. This is where some breath work can come into play. We're opening up, we're challenging a little bit the lung tissue. And yeah, someone just said the breath exercises can be very helpful during or after bronchitis. Yes. Yes. Any respiratory issue is very, very well served by really learning how to be with your breath and make it bigger. Moving the spine, the ribs, even the pelvis. The pelvis is tight, everything is tight, right? Just like if the eyes are tight, everything is tight. This comes back to that diagram with the little circles. It all connects. Of course, we have to work on things piece by piece. And then eventually we can feel that full flow. Potent posture, C. So potent posture. While stimulating and While more stimulating due to standing, I just mentioned this a while ago, it is challenging the balance organs of the body. And it's demanding a focused attention to the body position and standing, which in turn, due to this focused attention, can settle the nervous system. Again, I say can deliberately because everyone is different. But the moment we're upright, we have to use more of our faculties to stay upright. The heart has to increase, the blood pressure has to increase. We have to keep ourselves standing. All that is incredibly sophisticated. That's why it takes forever for little humans to get there. Diaphragms. Next one, D, joints, kidney, adrenals, brainstem, gut brain, mediastinum exercises. So, again, these are all lessons throughout the labs. They bring more focused attention to even more specific parts and systems of the body. So, these are lessons that are past the first three labs, obviously. But again, those are very specific to bring back connection to self, connection to, again, those stress organs, the connection between the gut and the brain, The mediastinum is that area around the heart. Goes, I can't show you, it's impossible, but it goes all the way to the front of the spine, which is back there, right? It's that cavity of the chest. Final one on this page, page four. So, plus, there's more visualization of the system opening up, that's the word, opening up, more space increasing, and even in the case of the kidney adrenals, a decrease of the body's stress chemicals, right? So, again, as noted on the kidney adrenal lessons, those have the purpose of really saying to the system, hey, it's okay to just chill out, right? Imagine, remember the visual I have of being in a pool of salt water, just nice and easy, bringing that flow to the system. All right, page five. Okay. So by bringing, oh, this is my bottom line. So again, I know I can't speak to every single lesson because we would be here for 10 hours, but just again, just a reminder, sometimes when we do these lessons, we think, oh yeah, I forgot about the inhale, exhale ones. Oh, I haven't done the joint one. The joint lesson can be super powerful in lab three, right? Oh, I haven't done potent posture in a while. I should do that again, right? Go back to even the basic orienting. So, bottom line, by bringing the focus, again, top of page five, by bringing the focus and attention to key stress organ systems, so kidney adrenals, the brain stem, the gut, and to areas of the body that get tight and shut down, such as the joints, the diaphragm, and mediastinum spaces, as a result of excess and toxic stress, we are facilitating a shift from survival, it's the word there, sympathetic fight flight, and parasympathetic freeze energy or shutdown energy, to the social engagement mammalian parasympathetic energies. It's a long sentence. So we're talking to these organs. We're talking to these, to me, they're more than organs. They're entire structures of our physiology. And saying to them through the lessons, hey, I'm here. I'm listening. I'm touching. Also, there's no need to do anything. It's just we're going to hang out and listen. This is one of the beauties of really gentle body work, craniosacral, osteopathic, therapeutic touch. We've developed these forms of body work because our systems have been braced or collapsed due to all these traumas, right? Animals in the wild aren't doing osteopathy on each other, right? They're in flow. That's funny, but some animals need it, but when you're out in the wild, they're doing their thing, right? So it's all about creating more of this healthy social engagement, parasympathetic energy. So, said another way, in order to become more evolved humans, which is the goal here, we're when we're under duress or stress that isn't life-threatening, we want to lessen the time that we're in our high dorsal vagal shutdown freeze responses, parasympathetic, or the high fight flight sympathetic nervous system. We want to move to more ventral, front facing. Hello, my name is Irene. We're here to hang out. We're talking about the weather. What did you have for dinner? Let's listen to some music. Right? That engagement. So to that parasympathetic. Just 1 sec. I gotta open my window, you guys. I'll be back. I'm not going anywhere. There we go. The heat is on, and I could sense the oxygen decreasing in my office. So I had to open the window. Okay. So we want to go from, it's going to sound strange, but reptilian to mammalian to human. Even though we all have reptilian nervous system physiology in us, right? We have this frog hanging out in our yard. True story. It's a toad. And that thing just likes to be in kind of freeze. It just sits there. You can go so close up to it. I'm like, are you alive? And you can see his little heart just going, going, going. So full respect, for the toads and lizards and that. Now, of course, we have that in us. When we have had a scary thing, what do? Right? So we want to go from that to that. All right, C, neurorelaxation. Rest that restores and repairs. So we need to rest. We need to chill. I understand that if we have underlying survival physiology in our system, that can be very difficult. But that is a goal. While I haven't studied deeply the old tribal culture, I've dabbled in it and listened to things and read books. A lot of the time that old tribal culture, and I'm like thousands of years ago, tens of thousands of years ago, they say that there was a lot of time resting. There was times of busyness, hunting, gathering, right? Making things, traveling, finding new spaces to live. But when they weren't in doing mode, it was lots of chill, lots of connection, sleeping. Has anybody found that when they do some of these lessons, they fall asleep? Some people, maybe that happens because it's a shutdown. I often think it's just because most of us are so damn tired that it brings us into our body awareness and it shows us, I really need to sleep, right? I really need to rest. We're not meant to live at the pace that most of us live at. I am included in that. So, again, need I say more? We need to rest. And we're in a tricky situation on planet Earth where we need to do a lot to live, right? And so this is why micro resting, that's not a thing, I just made that up. Little micro rests, pausing. Even the next time you get in, if you drive, the next time you get into your car, take 1 minute to just sit there before you even, well, I guess keys are not existent these days. I still have a key, right? Before you push the button. Just look around. See what's around you. Pause. Find little spaces in your day where you can just have moments of your stress chemistry coming down just a little bit before you go into the grocery store, right? Pause. Sense. So, depending on where we are in our lives, this is again neurorelaxation. Our demands, tasks, jobs, we might not always get what we need, but we can rest, sleep. But when we can, I should say, rest and sleep, we want it to ooze. I've chosen that word very specifically, like ooze, like slime, but not, right? We want that ease, that low tone dorsal vagal branch, the parasympathetic to turn on, right? That is really the goal. And that takes time, of course, and we've been living with survival physiology for so long. And some will say, go to page six here. Has anybody felt as they've gotten more capacity on board and more regulation that you're wondering if you're doing it right because things feel a little boring and dull, as opposed to living with drama constantly. Like looking for the next stress event to give you that little spike, right? When we've been used to adrenaline and really living on an edge and going for it, when we get more regulated, it's going to kind of confuse us because it's like, I just kind of feel like doing this today and not doing very much. And I actually feel quite content. Something must be wrong with me. But I actually think that that's the sign of actual re regulation. Goes back to that old tribal way of just hanging out, cooking a meal, tending to children, tending to ourselves, cleaning, right? Taking care of the home. So, page six here, personal assessment. Personal assessment is a must. You must change and prioritize to suit your needs. Everyone is different here. Some of us are in our older years. Some of us are retired. Some of us are young, haven't had our families yet. Some of us have children that are older. Some of us have children and parents we're taking care of. Some of us have jobs. Some of us are on disability. Everyone's different, right? So, what your system needs is very different than what the next person needs. Someone who's raising two children of infant and toddler age, you're going to be sleep deprived. It's going to be tiring, right? There's going to be a lot that has to be done. And yet, one can be in good flow and connected even in that busy time, right? And this is where, yeah, factor in days, times of the day where there's nothing planned. There's nothing planned, where you're just doing basic stuff. I've said this before in many other calls, but again, this is really for the parents who have kids that are young. Teach them very young to just take care of the home. Don't call them chores. Involve the children in your cooking, in your cleaning. Of course, you know, you're not going to do that when they're infants, but the moment they can carry something and help you, engage them with that. They like it. And then you form relationship and they know, oh, this is what you do in a home. I say that because so many young adults right now struggle, and I know even some older adults might struggle with how they take care of things because it was a chore or it was a threat or it was given with instruction that wasn't in connection, right? So that's my biggest plea for the people with little people. Make it be part of the world that you're in. Make quiet time be part of life. Make food making be part of life. Go to the grocery store together, plant food together. It lets them see this is part of life, right? All these things are, I think, really indicative of how to help the future generations know how to do things a little bit better. Okay. Someone just said something here that reminded me of a client I worked with ages ago. I'll share this final story before we get into the final piece here. It was just a session I did with one person. They were very young, like early 20s, and I taught them how to orient. This was ages ago, like 15, 16 years ago. And she wrote me back the next day. She still lived at home with mom and dad, but she was an adult, and that's fine. And she said, wow, after that session where you taught me how to orient, I saw how dirty my room was, and I just cleaned it up instantly. That was like the simplest session I ever did with someone. And but what happened was she had never stopped and paused to really look at her space in that inquisitive way. And for whatever reason, she had the oomph to get up and clean up things and do things without anybody having to tell her clean up her room. She just did it. I'd like to think that she's still cleaning up her room. This was a long time ago. But this is what we need to look around. We need to see how are things in my environment? What can I shift? Doesn't mean being perfect, but assessing your environment is important. All right, neurodifferentiation. I feel like I really hit this home at the beginning when I was talking about Nikolai Bernstein's paragraph there and listening to different sensations, different actions, different choices. I still do feel that we're differentiating always when we're learning, because it's just the nature of learning. But this is a little more advanced. Again, it's this refining the skills that we have, growing more options and choices. So again, this is in service of these different sequences, these different stages of neuroplastic healing sequencing. Differentiation being one of the higher level ones. This is what's covered in lab 9 and 10 with more advanced Feldenkraisian lessons that blend in listening to the kidney adrenals, making sound while noticing the pelvis. These are very unique to the blend of SBSM and bringing in those gentle basic orienting practices with, say, the Feldenkraisian methodologies. So that's what really that last lab is mostly is this high level of neurodifferentiation. And again, with those, you can just do 5 minutes. Again, all the lessons, listen. If it's just a couple minutes you do, that's cool. Just do a little bit and then do a little bit more each time. So again, Feldenkraisian learning is neurodifferentiation. The reason I really stress that is because you're thinking. Right, you can go for those who have, say, gone to body work sessions, or even when you're just laying your hands on, say, your chest and you're just sitting there, you don't have to think very much. I mean, the thoughts might come up, but that's that meditative mindfulness quality where you're just being still. Just like, again, if you're going to a body work session and you're just feeling the touch, you're not thinking, hopefully, about what's going on. Whereas the Feldenkraisian learning, you are thinking about a movement. You're thinking about moving a limb. You're thinking about the differences between left to right or forward to back. But the thinking is related to the awareness of your body. B, how can we make the learning more complex and still keep up the neuromodulation? So what that means is we want to up the ante on the complexity that we do, but we want to keep the modulation, the regulation going forward, right? We do this naturally. I mentioned this in, I think, the call last week. When a kid starts learning with a pen, right? I've got my pen here. They often grasp it full fist, right? Same with a cup. Little ones will hold their cup with two hands. As we become more differentiated, we can do more fine-tuning, right? Right. You start ABCs, big, chunky, and then they get, and you can do it really small. The more refined, that's more differentiation, that's more skill, more complex. And then the final one here, it all comes down to continually challenging and testing ourselves. That's the word. And breaking out of our comfort zones while staying present and oriented to ourselves. Continually recalibrating and lowering our stress chemistry and remembering to go back to the basics frequently. And I can't not say enough how important the basics are of orienting, following impulse, especially following impulse. sensing the ground under us, noticing our breath, having just done some teaching at some other levels, higher levels with practitioners in training. For 1 year, that's all we did. We did other things. We did thought-based things and movement-based things, but it always came back to, can you sense the ground under you? Do you know where you are? What is your breath doing? Are you breathing? Are you engaged? Because that is what we want to have when we're, say, working with others. And of course, when we go into something more complex. So, again, this idea of neuroplastic healing sequencing, we want to add complexity, but we always want to bake in the basics, always bake in those basics over and over again. Because going into complexity, if we can't keep that connection to self in the present moment, to be bold, I'll say it's going to defeat the purpose of going more complex, right? So basics, 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 add in a little complexity. Can I do the basics? Oh, I can't. No, I can't. Okay, better tone it back a bit and then go and do again in little bits, just like we would when we're learning anything new, right? So first and foremost, I always say this, I'll say this again. We are learning here, and the learning leads to healing. Hence the become your own medicine, right? You're learning how to create your own apothecary in your system by all these different exercises and learnings, curiosities, noticings. There we go. Ninth training call on top of many lessons and many other experiences. Seth still has his training call, not training call, Q&A call on Thursday. There's still live moderation till the 27th of June. We have a wrap-up call next Tuesday. And I want to just also mention, do not underestimate the power of Soma, that AI tool that we've created for y'all. I've seen some really interesting comments where folks are giving it a try. Remember, again, everything in there is us. There's nothing from the outside world in that. It's just our calls over 10 years. But someone the other day was mentioning that they were able to relieve, I forget what it was, not important, some symptom that was popped up by typing in the actual symptom into Soma, and it popped, boom, to one of I think Seth's Q&A calls, where it was explaining that exact symptom and how to relate it back to the lessons. So it really is handy. Give it a try, put a question in, and see how it works. I do think some of these advanced tools can be used for good purpose, and that's what that's there for. It's very hard to go back into these hundreds of calls and find specific spots. And that's what that will allow you to do. So I really want to encourage everyone to try that. Thanks, Susan and Jen, for hanging out today and helping out in chat as needed. And thank you, everyone, for hanging out here live. And of course, for all those on the recording. I know it's a little tougher to come into the recording, but I know many of you do. So thanks for doing that. And we'll see you next Tuesday for our wrap-up call. Thanks, everyone.